is the man and how is he capable of such a crime? Well, New York Times reporter Judith Miller has been covering the Islamic world for almost 20 years, and she provided NBC News with some insight.
I don't think he's crazy. He is devious. He is clever. He is relentless. And he is patient.
But he is not a madman.
But he is not a madman.
Judith Miller is a reporter for the New York Times. She's covered the Arab world since 1983, when she was chief of the Times Cairo Bureau.
Is calling this even fanaticism too simplistic?
Fanatic is actually a very good word to describe them. They are highly motivated, they are highly disciplined, and we underestimate them at our peril.
Understanding them is critical, too. What would motivate a young man, average age of a suicide bomber, is 22, to sacrifice his life as an unknown number did?
I think despair is partly responsible for this wave of suicide bombings.
Because they have nowhere else.
Because they have nowhere else to go. I mean, I have interviewed so many of these young people with so much hope for the future and so few prospects.
Especially the educated ones.
Especially the educated ones.
Dr. Gerald Post is a professor of political psychology at George Washington University. He's also a psychiatrist.
These people are distinctly not psychologically disturbed. In fact, interestingly, psychiatrically disturbed individuals are expelled from the groups because they're considered a security risk.
Many say it's a perversion of Islam that the Quran condemns suicide. But radical Islamic sects do not call it suicide. In their interpretation, not to act is immoral.
The motivation for these acts is both religious and social. And the social motivation is a fusion of nationalism and radical Islam.
What did America do to unleash this hell upon us?
Well, according to Osama bin Laden, we defiled sacred Saudi and Islamic soil.
When?
In 1990 and 91, when we sent American and international troops to defend his country against Iraqi soldiers.
Just as the Soviets had defiled Islamic soil in Afghanistan in 1979. Financed in part by his money, the Mujahideen then drove the Soviets out.
He needed an enemy.
But he needed an enemy, precisely. And he also had an enemy because the Palestinian people were being, quote, oppressed. And it was the duty of all Muslims to come and rescue them. And the Arab countries were being, quote, oppressed by autocratic, horrible rulers whose rule he also wanted to terminate. And he felt that by mobilizing and training Arabs all over the world and Muslims from all over the world, he could accomplish this.
Bin Laden and other radical factions of Islam frighten many in the Arab world too. They may not represent mainstream Muslims, but they are determined and well-financed. But Judith Miller argues that to persist in seeing them as crazy fanatics is dangerous.
We have to get rid of this image of these people as kind of wild-eyed fanatics who are disorganized and can't get their act together.
Why do we have to?
I think if we don't discard these images and stereotypes, we will underestimate the enemy.
What is it about the American psyche that may be undermining our own interests?
I think sometimes any democracy is ill-equipped because we are open. That is our trademark. We are ill-equipped to fight people who are looking constantly for our weaknesses, for our vulnerabilities, for ways in which we can be hurt.
Judith Miller covers bin Laden, weapons of mass destruction, and many other subjects for the New York Times. We just saw her in Jane's piece. Judy, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Katie.
Well, you know, there's so much to talk about with you, but first, Osama bin Laden and his followers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, highly trained, highly educated, very smart. You say they're not crazy. How can you say that?
Well, I think people who are militant are not necessarily crazy. People who are extreme should not be considered off the charts because they are highly determined people.
And it's too easy to dismiss people that we say are crazy. You say, as you told Jane, fanatic. is a much more appropriate word for them.
Absolutely. And I never liked the term fundamentalists. Sometimes we used to hear that they were called Muslim fundamentalists. Well, that means somebody who wants to go back to the basics
of
his religion. Exactly. And, you know, that's not what these people are. They have a very perverse, embittered interpretation of their religion, one that is not shared by most Muslims.
And anyone who does not share their view is basically...
is an infidel, is a traitor to Islam. And they define who, if I can use this term, is kosher and who is not.
And so this all basically dates back to the Gulf War, or was this sentiment pretty strong even prior to that?
It's been strong much for a long, long time in the region, and long before the Gulf War.
But did the U.S. become the clear-cut enemy during the Gulf War? Because,
yes,
in
did.
Fact, we
well,
came to Saudi Arabia
because
to...
we came to Saudi Arabia to defend them, but the fundamentalists, as they call themselves, and I call them fanatics, did not see it that way. They believed that the United States was there to prop up their, quote, corrupt regimes. They believed that the Egyptian government, the Saudi government, the governments that rule them, even though they claim to be Muslim governments, are actually infidel governments. They're not really Muslims. And so they want them overthrown, and they want the United States to leave the region.
How many followers does this individual, Osama bin Laden, have? Or is there any way of determining that?
It's very hard to determine, but we do know that some 5,000 people from all over the world passed through the training camps that he runs, that he personally finances and controls. But I think, Katie, it would be wrong to concentrate just on this one man. I think you have to look at the group of men, and by the way, it's always men, around him. These Egyptian militants, most of them, and Algerian militants, a few of them, are equally determined to wreak havoc and bloodshed on the United States.
So certainly our troubles are not over if Osama bin Laden is dispensed of.
Absolutely correct. And that's why I think it was very interesting that the administration said that it would be necessary not only to get the people who did this, but get the people who support them. And in that sense, he's referring not only to Osama bin Laden, but to the people who run the network, to the, quote, sleeper agents whom he has sent out all over the world.
Who have infiltrated legitimate organizations,
right.
Correct?
Absolutely. We believe so. And that's what the FBI is looking for now in this country and what our allies will soon be looking for. And the countries that host such people.
Do they move around, though, like chess pieces? I know Andrea Mitchell a few days ago described him as the master of disguise, someone who moves from place to place. We understand that Bob Woodward said, I guess, in the Washington Post, no one knows where he is right now, I believe. That's a difficult thing.
It's a very difficult thing because I've traveled to Afghanistan, and it is one very large, sparsely populated country, and there are many, many places to hide.
Tell me about the relationship between Osama bin Laden and the Taliban. First of all, we keep saying the Taliban, and there's so many people watching this who still don't understand. What is the Taliban?
Well, I think they're kind of hard to explain unless you've seen them in action. They are a group of self-described students of Islam. These are people who emerged from the religious schools after the Soviet Union was expelled from their country, mostly by their fathers. And these were people who were determined to bring their sort of Islamic rule, a very fanatical Islamic rule, to their country.
Are they in charge of Afghanistan?
They are in charge of 90% of it. There's a small sliver in the northern part of the country which they do not control.
And of course, I was going to say, their zealous nature has surfaced in terms of their treatment of women,
yes,
in Afghanistan, which has gotten a lot of attention in this country. Women are not allowed to leave their homes. The punishment that is mm-hmm. given out for various infractions is just unbelievable.
Well, I think, Katie, this comes in waves. When I was there last fall, women, you were in the market, you did see them, but they're totally covered. You never see their faces. They wear something called a burqa. They cannot work. if you're a little girl, you cannot be educated. And this, by the way, is totally contrary to Islamic tenets. It's just not part of Islam, but that's their interpretation of it.
So, Judy, what is the relationship between the Taliban and Osama bin Laden and his followers?
I think that the Taliban owe Osama bin Laden big time because he has helped finance their regime.
Where does he get all this money, by the way?
Oh, he's from one of the wealthiest families in Saudi Arabia. When his father died in 1968, he inherited $300 million just of his own. He's one of some 20 sons of one of the wealthiest, best-connected families in the kingdom. So this man has money.
So he's been giving it to the Taliban, helping to finance their efforts.
Absolutely. And they owe him. Plus, there's an ideological affinity. They have the same views. And for the Afghans who really do believe in this concept of, quote, hospitality and a guest is sacred and you must lay down your life to protect your guest, it's going to be very hard for Mullah Omar, who is the blind young sheikh, who one-eyed sheikh who leads them, to turn over his guest. Plus, as I said, they're turning over their meal ticket.
I hate to leave things on a very frightening note, but I know you've just written a book called Germs.
Yes.
About bioterrorism.
Yes.
Tell me about the Taliban and Osama bin Laden and his followers in terms of their nuclear capability or their capabilities to produce and deliver chemical and biological weapons.
Well, I think this is what scares me the most, and it's the reason that I was so determined to write this book and write about them. Osama bin Laden and Muslim fanatics like him are absolutely determined to get their hands on chemical and biological and nuclear weapons. Biological weapons in particular are terrifying, and when I was in Afghanistan, I tried to visit a camp where he and his followers have been experimenting with chemical and biological agents, and the United States knows that because it has seen pictures of dead animals lying around these camps, which have presumably been poisoned or filled with chemicals to see what will happen to them. And I think one reason the Bush administration is determined now to do something about this problem is that this time they attacked America with a conventional weapon, that is one of our own planes loaded with jet fuel, four of them in this horrible simultaneous attack. But next time we could be attacked with weapons of mass destruction, with biological weapons, which could make thousands and thousands of Americans sick. And that's why I think the Bush administration and the Clinton administration before Bush was determined to try and begin to prevent such groups from getting their hands on such horrible weapons.
And their nuclear capabilities?
Not yet. They don't have nuclear weapons. Afghanistan does not. Pakistan, which is its rather fanatical neighboring state and is now being asked to help the United States, they do have nuclear weapons. This technology is spreading, and it poses a danger to all democracies and I think to all civilized people.
And do you think Pakistan will share its information on nuclear weapons with Afghanistan, or do you think in this instance we'll be supportive of the United States and stand behind U.S. military action?
I think Pakistan has a very difficult decision to make, and I know that administration officials are hoping that they make the right decision, because if they do not, it will be very costly for the Pakistani people.
It's hard to really even digest.